amazing weekend of action across Major League Baseball, with the NL wildcard race getting a bit of a shakeup and the New York Yankees padding their lead in the AL East. We'll break it all down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, September 16th. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, what an amazing weekend of games. Just that was, there was a lot of fun action. I know that football did stuff. Yeah, whatever. But this was fun. This was September baseball. And ton of stuff to talk about here. I want to start with the NL wildcard race, though, because we saw, obviously, the Mets and the Phillies faced each other. The Braves and Dodgers faced each other. The Diamondbacks and Brewers faced each other. So a lot of kind of movement here. Let's start with the Braves and the Dodgers, because the Braves at this point have won 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers this weekend. They were winless against LA in 3 games entering the series. They win on Friday night 6-2. They win on Saturday 10-1. Those 2 games were powered by Chris Sale and Spencer Schwellenbach. And then they're tied 2-2 in the 9th on Sunday Night Baseball and allow 7 runs to the Dodgers, including back-to-back-to-back home runs. I don't even necessarily know, though, if that was the biggest takeaway from the weekend in this series, because a lot of pitching news came out of this. Walker Buehler, in his start last night, did not look bad. He goes 6 innings against Atlanta. He was incredibly efficient, had some 9-pitch innings on the back half there against Atlanta. I wonder how much of that is the Braves' offensive approach. And so now I have to wonder, with the news that Tyler Glasnow has had a setback in his elbow, and he is most likely out for the rest of the regular season and potentially the postseason, do you think that Walker Buehler could legitimately give you meaningful October innings for the Dodgers?
Yeah, we were discussing at one point last week of if he's even going to make the postseason roster. Now I'm seeing him as the potential number 3 starter on the team, not just a bullpen piece or like a forgotten piece, but you're still finding a way to make the roster for the playoffs. So I think he's going to be playing some meaningful innings just by default, Lindsey, because of some of the injuries. And that last start looked like, dare I say, signs of old Walker Buehler. And I think that, you know, if you can continue that, if you get hot at the right time, you know, who cares what the rest of the season's looked like? If he can pitch like he has in the past in September, moving into October, that's exactly when you need it, especially right now for this Dodgers team, who have Yamamoto, who we're going to see today on the mound, but only pitched 60 pitches in his last outing. So we don't know how far he's going to go. They're trying to get him stretched and ready to go for the postseason. Will that potentially happen? Will that potentially work? Well, based on the past history of the Dodgers pitching staff so far, the odds are in their favor, but I'm hopeful for Yamamoto. And then, of course, Jack Flaherty, who they got at the trade deadline. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see Walker Buehler start a playoff game this season, something I wouldn't have predicted 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he goes 7 different pitches in that start. Sinker, cutter, four-seam, knuckle curve, sweeper, slider, changeup. So legitimately 7 different pitches. The sweeper and the slider were different, different spin rates, different movement, different velocities. It's not just a classification thing here. Those were separate pitches. 10 whiffs, 29% CSW. So not amazing, but good enough to get you through a lineup at least once before you have to go into the bullpen, right? And then I think there's another aspect of this, and you heard it on MLB Network Radio over the weekend. The Dodgers have not ruled out the possibility of Shohei Ohtani pitching this postseason. Now, I think we all kind of assume if they get Ohtani pitching, it's going to be like what we saw in the World Baseball Classic. He'll be coming in for relief, pitching an inning here, an inning there, versus being a starter. Obviously, he's not pitched competitively since last year. But how How unfair is it that the Dodgers make it to add Shohei Ohtani as a reliever in October?
We were joking around when this news came out this weekend, and obviously we didn't have a show this weekend, so just sitting on that news waiting for today's episode to come out. And you made the funny joke, and I think I tweeted it out. I think I stole it from you. Plagiarism is real between the two of us. It's definitely right. So, no, just kidding. It's not. At Braves Today, my thoughts are original. So are Lindsay's. So keep that way. But regardless, you mentioned that Shohei Ohtani, could you imagine him with his 50-50 season and then potentially being the reason the Dodgers win the World Series, assuming they make it there, with a, let's just say, Game 7 save? I mean, how do you add more of a historic season to that? Like, he's already considered the greatest player of all time. And then, oh, by the way, let's just add a World Series save to this guy's record. Yeah, let's just go ahead,
like,
and figure it out.
He might come out and pull a Chris Sale from 2018 and get a six out save in Game 7 of the World Series or something. Like, yeah, of course. Of course he did. Of course Shohei Ohtani did that.
I'd love to see him do something like Enter Sandman. I know it's a Padres thing, but like, imagine one of those crazy just closer entrances for Shohei Ohtani. I'm sure that would be absolutely insane.
Instead of throwing in the bullpen, he's throwing down in the tunnel below. Like, nobody knows he's warming up, and they hit music and he comes out in the ninth. It would be the coolest moment I think we've ever seen in baseball. Okay.
You want the young kids to start watching baseball? Make that happen.
There you go. Okay. So sticking with this NL wild card, the Mets and the Phillies met up this weekend. Tough sledding for the Mets here. Felt like they were going to win more than they did. They took the Friday matchup 11-3. They lost on Saturday 6-4. They had a lead in that game. And then on Sunday, they were leading late until JT Realmuto did this.
Diaz delivers, and JT hits one in the gap. Right center, he'll win the game. Castellanos will score, and the Phillies beat the Mets on a walk-off by JT Realmuto.
So the Mets could have gotten a sweep there, had leads late in all three games, take one of the three. And it's not necessarily even just that's the bad thing. It goes from bad to worse with Francisco Lindor, right? Has a back issue after, I believe it's, and correct me if I'm wrong on this timeline, after Friday, like in Friday's game, leaves that game late, sits out on Saturday, starts on Sunday and has to come out after one inning because the back is continuing to bother him. He has an MRI scheduled today. As the time of recording, it's only like 8:45 Eastern time. We don't know the results of that. But obviously, you're in a situation now where losing two out of three to the Phillies while the Braves won two out of three against LA, you are now tied for that final wildcard spot again. And now you're facing the potential of losing your MVP candidate and the guy who has powered your offense all year. How much trouble are the Mets potentially in right now?
If they lose Francisco Lindor for any time, like, even if it's just a series, they're in big trouble because the Braves are starting to figure it out offensively. I know it doesn't look like that if you just only looked at the box score from yesterday. But if you looked at them the entire weekend, they've started to figure it out. And the Padres, we're going to talk about them in a minute, and the Diamondbacks, they're still in it, right? So if the Mets are trying to find their way to get into the wild card race without Lindor, it's going to be a really tough time. One plus side of the Mets weekend so far that I would have to point out is yesterday's pitcher. David Peterson has looked really good. He only gave up one run in 7.2 innings of work yesterday, which was really impressive. He started off with 7 shutout innings. So you got to like that because we've tried to answer that question of who would be their third playoff starter. And I think if they did make the postseason, I think you got your answer there. And then I know JT got the walk-off yesterday, Lindsay, but how crazy was it that the heroes of the game, other than JT, to get the actual scoring started, because Christopher Sanchez had a good outing as well for the Phillies, was Tyrone Taylor and Buddy Kennedy. Did you have that on your bingo card?
Exactly as we all predicted. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a weird question here, not on the rundown. So, kind of throwing this on you last second, but who do you think is more responsible for the Mets being in playoff contention a year earlier than their own timeline. The MVP season of Francisco Lindor or multiple starting pitchers like Luis Severino and Sean Manea stepping up in the rotation, because I personally thought the rotation was going to be their big weakness this year, not having Kodai Senga. Which of those is more responsible for this team being a postseason contender in mid-September?
Yeah, I got to lean towards the pitching staff too, because, you know, we knew what Lindor could do. And as great as a season he's having, you know, Mike Trout has great seasons and he doesn't make the postseason. So Lindor, as great as he's doing, the pitching staff is, I think, more valuable in the asset of getting them farther, you know, controlling that other aspect of the game for the Mets, something that, as you mentioned, I didn't expect them to have a great pitching staff this year, especially when Senga's only threw six innings all season long. Insane. So yeah, what we've seen from Manea, what we've seen from Severino, and now what we've seen for David Peterson has been truly impressive. And if they make the postseason, those three pitchers especially deserve a lot of credit.
Continuing with the NL wildcard theme here, Diamondbacks and Brewers had a wild series. Arizona avoided a sweep with a walk-off on Sunday in, I think it was 11 innings, after multiple blown leads from both teams in this game. Devin Williams never leaves the bullpen for the Brewers, despite Arizona getting bases loaded in the inning and eventually getting the walk-off. Eugenio Suarez hits the game winner there. And then the San Diego Padres, they sweep the San Francisco Giants over the weekend. And so now you're in a situation where the Padres are only 3.5 back of the Dodgers. And the Diamondbacks are now, because of this losing streak, the Diamondbacks are now just 2 games up of the pairing of Atlanta and New York for that, you know, in the wild card, with the Cubs 5 games behind. What is more likely, the Padres catching the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks falling out of the postseason altogether?
Wow, that's a fun question there.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean towards the Diamondbacks falling out. And I don't think that it could potentially be both, Lindsay. But I'm going to lean towards the Diamondbacks falling out. They're getting some of their injured guys back. Moreno came back this weekend. Christian Walker's came back just a few, you know, about a week ago. And it's still, they're still losing baseball games. Now they just scored a ton of runs. And you mentioned about the leads. It started off, Diamondbacks had the lead at 5-0. Then Milwaukee tied at 5-5. Then Milwaukee was up 8-5. Then they tied it 8-8. You know, and then the game finally went to extra innings. And the extra innings was insane too. Jackson Chourio hit a triple to clear the bases. And then they hit Christian Walker to bring in the tying run before Eugenio Suarez hit the RBI to win the game. It was just an insane game. Now I will say this, that if the Diamondbacks can figure it out, because their offense is starting to look decent, don't get me wrong, but they can figure it out, they will stay in the postseason race. And then I'll, you know, change my answer and say the Padres can catch up to the Dodgers, because we still have those questions about that Dodgers pitching staff. Mm-hmm. But I am nervous still about this Diamondbacks pitching rotation. I thought we were going to get some more answers this weekend. I don't think any of those were answered.
No, it's still a question as to who you would trust for a game to start, never mind 3 or 4. I know Ryan Nelson left this weekend with an injury as well, and so you're kind of nervous now. Looking at their road ahead, Arizona's still got 4 more against Milwaukee. They've got 3 against the Padres, while the Padres have 3 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Diamondbacks, 3 against the Astros starting this week. Although they do get the Chicago White Sox for 3, so that'll help a little bit.
Well, they're trying to, they have their own playoff game right now too, the White Sox, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but they're trying to fight for a record. So they might be a little tougher than we expected at the end of the season.
There you go. Moving to the AL East, the Yankees have now padded their lead over the Baltimore Orioles. They are now 3 games up in the AL East. When you look at what happened over the weekend, the Yankees won 2 out of 3 against Boston, while Baltimore lost 2 out of 3 to the surging Detroit Tigers. Aaron Judge hit his 53rd home run. And here's my question. Going back to the what is more likely thing, the theme that I kind of have decided spontaneously to do today. What is more likely, that the Orioles catch the Yankees in the division, or that the Royals, who are only 2.5 games back of the Orioles, that the Royals catch the Orioles in the wild card?
Wow. Oof.
2.5 games. It's the lead between Baltimore and Kansas City.
The Orioles have been shockingly disappointed lately.
3-7 in the last 10 games.
I'm going to say that one. I'm going to say the Royals can catch the Orioles for the top wildcard spot. I think it's almost all but over in the AL East right now. Yeah. The Yankees are surging right now. Their magic number to make the playoffs is only 3 games. And Aaron Judge hit his 53rd home run over the weekend. The Paw Patrol curse is finally over. That is important. That is very important for Yankees fans. And some of the players that have not done well this year are starting to do really well. Gleyber Torres, 882 OPS in his last 7 games. He is on fire right now. 2 home runs, 5 RBIs, 323 batting average with that OPS as well. So guys like that, like Gleyber Torres getting hot, that's exactly what you need moving into the postseason. So count me in on the Yankees winning the AL East, something that I don't think I've said all season long so far. I thought Baltimore was going to be able to hold on, but that young core's being tested. And I think we're going to see if they can actually hold on to that top wild card spot. They'll make the postseason, and we'll see if they can win a postseason game, something that did not happen last year, right? The Rangers, I think, swept them.
Yep.
So, we'll see what happens. But I think I got the Yankees winning that American League East.
Yeah, Yankees road field a little bit easier. The only tough series they have left is Baltimore for 3 games. Tankathon lists Seattle as a tough series. I don't think Seattle's a very tough series at this point. They strike out way too much. They also get the A's for 3 and the Pirates for 3, whereas Baltimore, obviously they get the Yankees. They also have 3 against the Twins and 3 against the Tigers. 3 more against the Tigers. Now, obviously they showed this weekend they weren't quite ready to handle the Tigers. And I don't remember if Tariq Skubal pitched this weekend or not, but they may not have even had to face Skubal this weekend, and they still dropped the series. So
I will say that the Tigers looked really good this weekend, especially yesterday. Green had 2 home runs. Keith had a beautiful hit to take the lead. And Montero pitched
Tyler Montero.
Yeah. And another solid outing from him. I think he went 5 scoreless. So you got to love that. So the Orioles have struggled with runners in scoring position, and they struggled all day yesterday as well until Adley Rutschman hit his home run late in the game. That is something they needed to correct for these last 2 weeks of September, or they might find themselves farther down than the first wild card spot. And you mentioned maybe the Royals can take it from them.
Yep. All right. I don't want to spend too long on this because they're not a good team despite winning back-to-back games for the first time in nearly 3 months. But the Chicago White Sox, we know that they're bad, right? We know that they are not only bad, they're historically bad. They are 35-115. They are 5 shy of tying the worst record in baseball, the 1962 expansion New York Mets. And so their GM, Chris Getz, sits in the booth over the weekend and said this.
We're not going to be working heavy in free agency. We've got guys out on the field right now that need to improve their game. A lot of these guys are young players and need to make the adjustments to be more productive.
We're not going to be working hard in free agency. We've got guys on the field right now who need to improve their game. Yes. Okay, cool. You went 33-115 so far, and you're going to return a lot of those players in 2025. After refusing to trade a rental player in the division, you didn't trade the best starting pitcher in Garrett Crochet, who was available at the deadline. You didn't trade one of the best outfielders in Lubob, who was available at the deadline. Having a great year. How pumped are you for next season for the Chicago White Sox?
Could you imagine any Chicago White Sox fan hearing that and then saying, I can't wait to buy my season tickets next year? I don't think a single person said that. How can you expect your attendance went down, and rightfully so, because you have been the worst team in arguably baseball history. Your attendance has gone down almost on average 4,000 people per game. And that's pretty big because their average is only about 21,000 to begin with. Yeah. They're 27th in average in the entire league. And you're trying to cut salary even more. I just can't believe it. Now, there's some players that you can expect that'll be moved. And I think even before these comments, you could expect that happening. Garrett Crochet being one who asked for that big raise in the offseason or moving into the offseason before the trade deadline. He wanted the contract extension before being traded. So I'm sure he's on the move. But you know, you got some other guys like Yoan Moncada, who has been injured all season long. He's expected to make almost $25 million. But his buyout will only be $5 million. So you can expect him to probably be a free agency coming in the winter as well. If they're going to try and cut payroll, that seems almost like an obvious given. We'll see what happens here. However, I think this is embarrassing, not only for the White Sox and White Sox fans, but all of baseball. Just making these comments. One, I know you can't fool a Southsider. I get that. But you don't make these comments. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
Yeah, don't put it on the players for the bad team that you built. Also, note to your point there, Juan Moncada is expected to come back, be activated today. So you'll get a chance to actually see what he can do before the season ends. 54 blown leads for the White Sox this year. They've been shut out 18 times, and they've been walked off 9 times. Just find it interesting there. It's kind of how that's gone. Okay, getting a quick pitch real quick. Couple interesting debuts that we saw. Luis Angel Acuña, the little brother, one of the younger brothers of Ronald Acuña Jr., debuted for the Mets over the weekend. He was originally an international free agent of the Rangers, moved to the Mets in one of those Rangers. I believe that was the Max Scherzer deal, actually. Made his debut over the weekend. How do you think he looked? You saw it. How do you think he looked?
Yeah, I didn't think he looked bad. Now, he came in for Francisco Lindor yesterday's game, so I don't know if he was actually planning on playing yesterday. But overall, he played in 2 games over the weekend. He went 2-for-7. There's just 2 singles, and he only struck out once, did not walk, but not a bad little start to his career. So I hope it works well. I am more excited than anything, and it's not going to probably happen until 2025, obviously, but to see the Braves and the Mets face off when the Acuña brothers take the field. So that's what I'm really excited for, but it's nice to see the first taste of them. And just to make sure we clean that up, you are correct. The Mets traded Max Scherzer and cash to the Texas Rangers for Acuña.
Yeah. If I have my Braves history right, both Ronald and now Luis Angel Acuña, their first base hits were ground balls up the middle against the Phillies. So I find that really interesting. That's just kind of a little fun thing there. Talking about debuts, Pablo Sandoval debuted on the mound in the Atlantic League for the State Island Fairy Hawks. 5 1/3 innings, 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk to force strikeouts. How improbable is it that Pablo Sandoval went out there and gave you 5 shutout innings at what, the age of 39?
Yeah, that's impressive. And I move over Bartolo Colon. We got a new big sexy on the mound. This one just happens to be a panda. You know, I'm really excited to see this. And this is just one of those fun baseball moments, right? And obviously this isn't anything that's going to change the aspect of baseball. But if you're a true baseball nerd like we are, these are the things that you live for. You love seeing things like this. So awesome. Good job, Sandoval.
And also, he's lost some weight. He looks good. So shout out there. Happy for him.
Yeah.
Talking about guys that look good. Matt Adams, Big Country, signing a 1-day contract to retire as a St. Louis Cardinal. How tempting do you think it is to stick him into the lineup on Monday night?
Go ahead and pull my heartstrings on that one. But it's really cool seeing Matt Adams, you know, sign that 1-day contract. Many people don't think about him being a Cardinal, which is surprising because he played most of his career there. I think most people actually think of him being either an Atlanta Brave or a Washington National based on, you know, what he did and helped the Nationals get into the World Series. But he had a good career with the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm excited to see what they do for him probably next season at some point, you know, because Busch Stadium and the Cardinals fans are very, very gracious fans. I bet he could still hit, and he probably could do pretty good at first base right now, or maybe in the corner outfield with a team like the Cardinals, who are now at one point was a potential playoff team. Now I don't know if they're even going to make it to be above 500 once the season's over, Lindsay.
Yeah, batted .266 over 7 years in St. Louis. Braves fans will remember him as being so good that Freddie Freeman temporarily moved to third base to keep Matt Adams
in
the lineup.
That was him at first base. That
Matt Adams was the reason Freddie came back from an injury and played third base for like 3 weeks.
That's right.
All right, and then kind of wrapping this up, we saw history with the San Francisco Giants and outfielder Heliot Ramos.
He gets some serious tilt. Down the line! Hit well! It is out of here! Did he do it? And this game is tied. And now we want to find out if that went into the water. Because if it did, there's never been a right-handed hitter that has done it since this ballpark opened its doors in 2000.
It did, in fact, go into McCovey Cove. Heliot Ramos is the first right-handed hitter to ever put a home run into McCovey Cove. He actually talked about that after the game. He said that's something he's wanted to do. He's thought about it. He wanted to do it. The ball was recovered by McCovey Cove Dave, who Braves fans will remember. He refused to give Michael Harris his first grand slam back, said that was the most important ball to him. As of last night, McCovey Cove Dave has said that this ball is the most important home run that he's ever collected in his career. Quote, "It's my most precious ball. I've worked over 20 years for it." At this point, is McCovey Cove Dave just Zach Hampel on a canoe?
Yeah, it's a weird flex, right? I did see that he was going to work with something out with Cooperstown, at least, but not the Giants. So I'll take that if that's the case, because that belongs in some sort of museum. It really does, because, you know, this is the 105th splash hit in all of Giants, you know, since 2000, as you mentioned, but only the first one's a right-handed batter. That's impressive. And I will say also one little fun quirk as well. I love that he did it wearing Roberto Clemente's 21 jersey as well. Also another nice little added touch to it. The chef's kiss, if you will.
Yeah, that's just a nice little, obviously, Roberto Clemente day on Sunday. I found that interesting after the Michael Harris homer. I guess this is the Braves guy in me. After Michael Harris homer, reportedly, McCovey Cove Dave had asked to be given access to the employee parking lot so he didn't have to take his kayak with him on the public transit to get to the games. He could just drive and park in the employee parking lot. And then from what I saw last night, his first request in this was he wanted a photo to be posted with the ball if they were to get the ball back. He wanted a photo of him and Heliot Ramos together posted with the ball wherever the Giants chose to display it. And it's just, at this point, what are we doing, man? What are we doing?
You know what? I thought it was the fact that the first time around with the Harris, I thought he asked for a job. I thought it was first, but the parking lot thing doesn't seem so unreasonable. But at the same time, it's like, you can't get that special treatment. You're sitting in the harbor, and, no way. So just weird. Just weird. What a weird flex.
Absolutely weird. All right. It's a short list of games today. We've only got 10 matchups. Philly and Milwaukee is going to be really interesting. Two first place teams. Ranger Suarez versus Aaron Civale. I do think Houston-San Diego is a really interesting matchup. Spencer Arrighetti versus Yu Darvish. And then the Braves and Dodgers. We mentioned this earlier. They do wrap up their series. Yamamoto versus Max Fried. But keep an eye on Detroit at Kansas City. Detroit's been incredibly hot recently. We don't know who they're starting today. But Seth Lugo goes for the Royals. That's going to be an interesting one as far as the American League wildcard race shakes out. What is your most anticipated matchup of the day? And also, how terrible is it that nobody's playing a day game today?
Yeah, I hate that. Can't stand it. You know, whether it's a Monday or Tuesday, whatever the case might be, baseball is ruining the morning segments for me since I live on the West Coast, not giving me day games because, come on, we have NFL football in the evening on Monday. Perfect time to have at least one or two day games. Baseball, figure it out. But I love all the series you mentioned. I'm, of course, excited for Yamamoto and Fried tonight for the Dodgers and Braves. But I want to see Paul Skeens pitch because it might be one of the only last times we might see him, I think, one more time after this. Mm-hmm. He's going up against the Cardinals, and, we're still trying to decide who's going to win that National League Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, we still don't know who it's going to be. Also, fun fact, the next day game for MLB is Wednesday at 2:20, Oakland at the Chicago Cubs. I don't know why there's not a day game every single day, and that needs to be the free game on MLB.tv.
Especially Tuesdays. When is there college football? Is there NFL? No, it's in a wide open spot for you, baseball. Take charge because you're already battling against that sport. Take a spot where no one is right now. Tuesday day games must happen, especially in September.
This has been First Pitch for Monday, September 16th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below. Let us know what series you're most looking forward to this upcoming week. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.